running.
Once again. Can you hear us? Can you hear me on Zoom? Yeah? Not so good. Maybe turn up the sound. I don't know. Is that better? Yeah. Good. Question problem. Okay. This morning and in the past few days, I've been sitting with a phrase from Dogen. Everything preaches the Dharma. And this phrase is really incredible. It just fills me with so much joy. If we instead of the word preaches, sometimes it's translated as expresses, which is probably a better word. And so if, you know, as I sit with it, then I come to realize that that it means, in a strange way, that everything is expressing the Dharma and is an expression of. You see, it's this double thing. So the baby out there in the first period is expressing the Dharma and is an expression of the Dharma. And that expressing, that means that there's no separation. So that baby is completely expressing the Dharma and completely an expression of entire, whole. And so the more that I sit with this, and you can try it, it's just nothing is left out. I, on this Rakusu that I have, my teacher wrote, love everyone, love everything. If we really sit with this, everything expresses the Dharma, there's nothing left out. No one left behind. Nothing that isn't it. And it just opens so wide. The moment, the universe, plural universes, plural moments. It's vast and tiny at the same time. Everything. So during the break, Joa sent me a message because he's hosting our study group this morning on a different link, and wished us a good day of practice. And he said, oh, you know, the Gay Pride Parade passes right by here today, this afternoon. And so I thought, oh, wonderful. Wonderful. What a, you know, overflowing expression of the Dharma. Because you can always count on the Gay Pride Parade to be so colorful and so alive, you know. So I looked up the route, and actually it comes to the Bastille and then turns on the Rue de Lyon. So it will fill the Place de la Bastille. We'll probably hear it in the distance, but it then turns and ends at Nation. Um, would have been nice if it just went all the way down the Faubourg Saint-Antoine to Nation, but it's not. But that too expresses the Dharma. Whatever path it's taking expresses the Dharma as an expression of the Dharma at the same time. And then if we think of this, so one of our precepts that we have in the Zen tradition, in all the Buddhist traditions, but we formulate them a certain way in our tradition, I think it's the eighth precept, is I vow to refrain from being stingy. And we add, especially with the Dharma. And this is kind of a weird phrase.
I never understood this.
Exactly.
I said every day I have no idea what it means.
So, we will discuss this now. Because it's absolutely amazing what that means. Although, like you, I was kind of like, okay, fine, you know, it's supposed to be like, I'm supposed to welcome people when they come and sit. If someone asks me a question about what I do, I should tell them. You know, I don't know what that means. Right.
What mean French?
Stingy?
Stingy. C'est être économe, c'est...
Avare.
Avare. It's debt.
To, you know, like not give very much, hold things back. So if we look at it, so if we say everything expresses the Dharma, well, everything is not stingy. It's completely, nothing is withheld, it's fully, completely expressing the Dharma. No separation whatsoever, just fully giving itself completely, everything. The universe just gives itself freely, not stingy in the least. So the, if we look at it in terms of, so when we look at it that way, you know, oneness, nothing is outside of it. So if we say the Dharma or the universe, or when we see from the point of view of oneness, everything being one, nothing is outside of it. So there is no stinginess. It's just what it is. Nothing is held back because there is nothing to hold back. And then if we look at it from the relative, the multiplicity, the diversity aspect, the one is manifest in everything, again. So, and the one manifests itself over and over and over and over and over and over again, moment to moment, in every phenomenon. Everything is expressing it. Everything is it. No stinginess there, whatever. Nothing is held back. And that's what this precept means. To see. So when we, you know, all these precepts are pointing us to something about our essential nature and how we aspire to live, our awakened nature and how we aspire to live, right? And from that awakened perspective of seeing the oneness, there's no stinginess. And so we're vowing to refrain from being stingy so that we can fully, so especially with the Dharma, so that we can fully express it, because we're expressing it anyway, but we don't see it, right? As that, you know, in the chant that we do of the relative and the absolute, I recently saw a new translation of that, which is not necessarily better, but it maybe expresses it differently. So it says, if you don't see the way with your own eyes, you won't recognize the way even as you're walking on it. So we're expressing the Dharma fully. We are an expression of the Dharma fully every moment, but we don't see it. We don't appreciate it. Walking the way, we're never near or far from it. It's always right here. Always. Right here and now. But if we're deluded, so if we don't see that, we're cut off from it by mountains and rivers. Now, usually that line is translated as we are mountains and rivers away from it, which sounds like, you know, mountains and rivers, and we're really far away from it. It's way far away. But actually, it's our concept of mountains and rivers that is cutting us off from it. It's our stinginess, our holding back, our limited view. So we can say a limited view of reality is stingy. We're not fully expressing it and seeing it as it is. We're not giving ourselves entirely to it. And I tell you, this sitting with this phrase, everything expresses the Dharma, is like takes away all stinginess. It just like really opens everything. Because then we are asked to, at every moment, say, oh, okay, if everything expresses the Dharma, this too, that baby out there, and the parents who don't seem to be interacting at all with the child, are, that's all an expression of the Dharma. They're all expressing the Dharma. Of course, my opinions, my ideas, why don't those parents deal with that child? Not because I want the child to shut up, but because the child clearly, you know, is calling out. So I can see my reactions to it, my responses to it. That too is an expression of the Dharma, and that too is expressing the Dharma. And then that like eases, I don't have to hang on to that anymore. Oh, it's just another expression. I can let go of it. It's just another expression of the Dharma. And then that will change how that, and then if I can let go of that, then I don't get up off my seat and go out there and scold the parents, you know? Or I don't make myself miserable sitting here, oh, those parents are so lame, why don't they do something for that child? So that's what, you know, this opening of, so when I say I sit with it, you know, I bring that phrase up, like with a koan or something, bring it up, and I see what happens. I bring it up, and I see what happens. And it's like a key that unlocks the moment, that phrase. And it makes possible an unlimited amount of stories. Stories in the sense of what is the story of the moment, you know, whatever is happening here and now. Because again, we limit ourselves with our small little story, our small story of me, this is what's happening, this is how I feel about it, and then this is how I react to that, from that place of how I feel about it. Instead of opening it up and hearing all other kinds of stories. You know, maybe those parents out there were packing the car for a trip or something and they couldn't deal with the kid right now or something, because it seemed like we could hear the parents kind of talking to each other, but nobody seemed to be addressing the child. Who knows what the story was? But the stories are unlimited. The expressions are unlimited. The expressing is unlimited. And we limit ourselves with just this expression. So the Dharma talk is just this right now. But actually, it's not. The Dharma talk is ongoing every moment. Everything is giving a Dharma talk. You're giving a Dharma talk every step you take, everything you do, every word, expression, sleeping, eating, showering, walking, Dharma talk. We limit ourselves so much with our categories and positions and so yeah, Dogen frames this as, you know, I'm saying we limit ourselves with our small stories Dogen says we bind ourselves with a rope. So we're like tying ourselves up with a rope. And that rope is our identity, our idea, our small story, our idea about who we are. So it's like, I forget where I read this, something about, like a koan, I think there's a master who says, you know, you monks, you know, he doesn't say you have such a limited view, but it's like, when you're sitting in a chair, you have the chair view. When you're eating your bowl of rice in Oryoki, you have the bowl view. You limit to that view of where you are. Instead of, this is just another expression of the Dharma, it's like, where I'm sitting is the view. This is it. My position is the view. And it reminded me of like on Zoom, so we can click on the gallery view, or we can click on the speaker view, and there may be some other views that we can click on, I don't know. And that changes how we see the screen then. I personally, when I'm, like for example, when I do Dokusan online or something, I click on the speaker view. So I don't have to see myself. I'm just a little tiny window and the other person is the main person. Or when I give a Dharma talk, I click on the gallery view, so it's not just my big face that I'm seeing on the screen. Right? I like to make the view wide, beyond just my little view. So that too is, every view is an expression, is expressing the Dharma. Or, you know, instead of Dharma, we could say, is it, you know? Is expressing it, is expressing, or sometimes we say the way, that comes from the Taoist tradition, the way. Well, what is the way? You know? Well, the way, so the way for the Pride March, is it just going, so it goes Rue de Rivoli, Rue Saint-Antoine, Bastille, Rue de Lyon, Boulevard Diderot, Nation. But the Pride March is everywhere, at every moment. It so happens that today, that's where the Pride March goes. It so happens that today, this is where we're sitting. This expresses fully the Dharma, it, the way, as does sitting in the metro, sitting in a cafe, walking on the train, riding your bike, whatever, wherever you are, there, that's it. That's it. Whatever meets the eye is the way, we could say, even. Okay, when we say meets the eye, it's, you know, a way of saying, whatever we experience, maybe. Whatever enters our awareness, maybe something. What doesn't enter our awareness is also expressing the way, but we have a direct experience of it when it meets our eye. We could say it meets our eye, the letter or eye. And that's how we respect this precept of not being stingy with the Dharma. We're stingy with the Dharma when we pick and choose. When we say, oh, well, this is practice, and that's not. This is the way, and that's not. And we do that all the time, right? We so recognize ourselves. Even if we don't think that we're judging You know, even if we don't think that we're being stingy, we're not recognizing that the one is manifesting over and over and over with just this unbelievable abundance, you know. I look at my garden at my house and it's just abundance of dharma. And my husband, who's the gardener, is forever saying, oh, the garden doesn't look good. Oh, it's really struggling. There's too much wind. There's not enough rain. It's too hot. It's too cold. You know, all kinds of things. It's absolutely fabulous. It's fabulous in the winter. It's fabulous in the summer. It's fabulous when it rains. There was this huge hailstorm. I think when we were in Fontainebleau, was it? When we were in Noisy, was it? I was not at home at my house when it happened, so I think it was when we were in Noisy. Huge hailstorm, and in a few weeks ago, a month ago, and it, of course, a lot of the plants suffered from that. Even the table that we have outside to eat on had little dents in it. It was really heavy hail, big hail. And so I haven't stopped, the talking about that has not ended as in relation to the garden. That too is an expression of the Dharma. But if we can see, you know, you are the garden, then it changes everything. The garden is the Dharma. And it's neither good nor bad, high nor low, flourishing or not. It's flourishing even when it looks like it's dead. So this has just been a really liberating phrase. And I came across this poem that, so I'm looking for next weekend. I will be in Germany at the wedding of my Dharma sister, Corin, and Corin Hershey. And so I promised that I would read a poem. Either I will write a poem or I will find a poem to read. And so haven't done either for the moment, so kind of looking for poems, kind of. So, but I found this really beautiful poem by Hafez, who was a Sufi, like maybe contemporary of Dogen, maybe. Quite famous poet, you know, mystic Sufi. And it doesn't really work for a wedding, but it doesn't matter. It works for this Dharma talk, right? So the title is "The Sun Never Says."
The sun never says.
Right. Yeah. The sun never says. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, "You owe me." Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole world. That is so beautiful, this poem. It's just like, this is, you know, the sun is everything. We can, you know, we can replace it. Everything expresses the Dharma, and it never says, "You owe me, I'm giving you the Dharma. I'm expressing this for you. I'm giving you a Dharma talk." It never says, "You owe me." And it lights up the whole world. It's just this love everyone, love everything that just lights up the world. It works with the sun as a metaphor because it actually does give light, right? Absolutely beautiful. But these Sufi poets, you know, mystics, they're just so amazing.
His name again?
Hafez.
Hafez.
If you look him up, you'll find all kinds of... And Hafez actually means... the name, I don't know. Means something in Arabic. The one who... meets Allah or something. I don't know, something like that. Yeah, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Yeah. No stinginess. The sun is not stingy. It lights the whole world.
And it's not only light. I think I brought mangoes, and the mangoes are so like that because the sun is...
Because of the sun, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And it's not stingy with what it gives to the mangoes.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't give more to the mangoes than to the pineapples or to the apples or the cherries or whatever. No stinginess.
And sometimes it dries up everything.
Absolutely. Same thing. It's, you know, not holding back. I was at a conference the other night, which was actually about physics, and poetry. It was called Le Défilé des Étoiles at the Théâtre de la Colline with my theater director of the moment, Vajdi Mouad. And they showed these pictures of the death of the sun. Like, I don't know how they can do this. But it was an actual image, you know, but I'm not sure, I didn't quite understand if it was like a projection of what it will look like when the sun dies, or I don't know. It was very strange, very intriguing. You know, they also showed pictures of like a black hole, and each of the people who intervened represented, so there was a astrophysicist who's also like kind of a poet, but actually a scientist, and then there was a physicist, a poet, an Iranian woman poet, and they each, so there was the guy who was the astrophysicist, his personage, his character was emptiness, the void.
This is a play.
Well, they were just sitting on stage talking to each other, but because Vajdi Mouad is a theater director, they each had a role that they were supposed to incarnate. And the guy who, the physicist was, his role was the black hole. And the poet, the woman, her role was the souffle, breath. And Vajdi Mouad, his role was, I think it was either light or sun, the sun. I think it was light, the light. And then there was someone who was supposed to be there, who was also some kind of scientist, but couldn't make it. And it just so happened that he was supposed to represent, his character was time. So it was really this weird thing where time was absent. And then there were these musicians who occasionally would intervene and perform like Bangladeshi songs and stuff. It was really amazing. But so interesting. So how do you? So then they each had to present themselves. So the black hole had to present himself as the black hole, and emptiness had to, the void had to present himself as the void. It was really, you know, the Dharma manifesting, expressed at every moment, you know, and all the people in the audience, and everything was an expression of the Dharma at that moment. So if you had to be the character emptiness, what would you do? How would you present yourself, you know? He like actually did like a description, you know, like there's nothing that I can be called, and I, you know, I'm at the same time, I can be called anything, or, you know, it was like this kind of description, and they all kind of did that. But they're each expressions of the Dharma. They're each expressing the Dharma fully, completely at that moment. And the emptiness never says to the black hole, you owe me. And the black hole never says to the universe, you owe me, you know, or you're not seeing me, right? Because you can't see the black hole. That's part of its features. You can't see it, so I'm not being seen. So how do we hold it all, you know? And how do we, this phrase unlocks it though. Everything is in, everything expresses the Dharma. It just really unlocks that the how is almost no longer necessary because it is. It is. And there's so much freedom in that. Again, as I was packing up my bag to come this morning, and I thought it was going to be more streamlined today because I didn't have to bring the benches to sit on, but actually it's pretty much the same. A big bag of stuff, you know. And that too was like, that's an expression of the Dharma, and that expresses the Dharma in this very particular situation, that the way that we practice it. You know, we give ourselves this formal practice, which is very informal, compared to some places and some versions. And so part of that is just that we carry stuff around with us, you know, and we use whatever is here. So we use these mats for zabutons, or Tiago is sitting in his workshop, in his studio. Carla and Miguel, I guess, are at home. I don't know. We're all sitting wherever we are, and we're all here. The people out there are here too. There's this guy who's gone out in and out a couple of times because the door's open. I can see it. And once he went out with his dog, and then he came back in with his dog. And as he went by, the dog kind of it didn't pause so much, but it looked in, and it's like I met eyes with the dog. It was this amazingly beautiful moment, and I'm not really a dog person. You know, so I'm a cat person, so I don't really have a lot of tenderness and feeling for dogs. But that moment with that dog was just, you know, I could have wept just meeting that dog's eyes there and him meeting me. He's on the way, that dog. He's with us here, and that dog is expressing the Dharma.
He does have Buddha nature.
What?
He does have Buddha nature.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That doesn't help you solve Mu, but he does, you know. And, you know, so wherever we are, like, you know, like my teacher's teacher, you know, says at the end of the retreat, if you don't want to leave the Zendo, don't enter it, right? So we are never entering and leaving the Zendo. It's all the Zendo. The universe is our Zendo. So then we say, well, why do we do all this then? Why do we wear these things? Why do we ring these bells? Why do we do these days like this? If it's all it, why do we do it, you know? Well, because we don't see it all the time. You know, we lose track of it. We get so caught up in our limited stories about ourselves and the world, we are bound by the rope of our identity, that we need to, okay, stop. Let's look at this. What's going on here? You know, what is this all about? And we stop, and we know that when we stop like this, something happens. We some of our attachments, some of that rope is loosened. We might have a moment where we have this glimpse of everything that's expressing the Dharma. And then suddenly everything changes. And all of the rituals and the structures and the chants and whatever, it's only there, we only use that to help us stop and just sit here. And that's why if we become attached to those forms and ways of doing things and thinking the Zendo has to look a certain way, has to be a certain place, you know, like that story I tell about the guy in Lisbon who, at the Deshimaru place, who actually Miguel was there with me and João at the lunch. He took us to lunch, which was very nice. And that night I was giving a talk at, no, maybe it was the night before I had given a talk at the Buddhist Union, when the Buddhist Union had a place in Lisbon. And he said, oh yeah, so I heard you were giving a talk, or you gave a talk, or, and I said, yeah. And I said, you must have given talks there too, you know what it's like there or something. He said, oh no, you know, we can't give talks there because Dharma talks can only be held in the dojo, as they call it. And I thought, oh my goodness, what a rope we tie ourselves with, that we can only give a Dharma talk in a certain place. And it's his dojo is absolutely beautiful. I mean, it would be a great place to give a Dharma talk. He took us thereafter. Really beautiful. They have a lot of money, so they have this nice place. And, you know, everything comme il faut, as we say in French. But to limit ourselves with that story of you can only give a talk here, wow, that's like being stingy with the Dharma. You know, when I would give a talk at the Buddhist Union, there were people who knew nothing about Zen or anything and would come and hear the talks. If you only give talks, like the only people who are going to hear this talk today in this very specific instance are the people here and then people who are on the screen, and then if anybody is recorded, so if anybody happens to go listen to it online. It's very limited, the audience. And yet it serves our purpose, it helps us on our way, it helps us to widen and see that everything is a Dharma talk, to hear Dharma talks. It helps us. And we try, the reason we put it online, is recorded and put it online, is to not be stingy, to get it out there. You know, maybe we could even do better with that, I don't know, but that's what we do. You know, and we never say, you owe me. I always say, if people say, oh yeah, I can't come to the retreat, I don't have any money, I say, well, that doesn't mean you can't come to the retreat. Someone told me recently about, you know, this practice we have of counting the breath. We say it's a beginner's practice, but it's also a practice for anyone. Wonderful practice. And so they said, oh yeah, I told some people how to do it. But then, you know, they come back and they say, oh, I don't like that. I don't like to count the breath, or I can't do it, or something. And so then I tell them they can do something else. Well, okay, so listen to the sounds or focus on your body or something. I said to him, okay, that's fine to do that, to give them something else to do. However, you might say to them, as soon as they say, I don't like this counting the breath, you might say to them, that's not a reason not to do it. You know, liking it or not liking it, that's not a reason not to do it. You don't have to be stopped by the fact that you don't like it. You can open to, okay, I don't like it, I'll do it. Or I don't like it, and question yourself, what is it that I don't like? Because usually if we don't like it, it's because we want to be doing something else. We don't want to stay with what we don't like. And because we don't want to stay with what we don't like it. And that applies to everything we do. You know, I don't like this. Okay, you know, I don't like smoked tofu or something. Just pick something, you know, that we don't like to eat. Okay, so when I have the choice, I just don't buy smoked tofu. But if somebody serves me, you know, in a sashin or something, and somebody serves me smoked tofu, I eat it, or if I, you know, or I don't. But I don't get caught up on limiting my story to I don't like smoked tofu, and it's impossible, and become annoyed with people who serve me smoked tofu or something. Why is it that I don't like smoked tofu? I can question myself, you know. And maybe that's not such a good example, because we just can have, you know, tastes that appeal to us and others that don't. You know, people who, personally, I didn't grow up eating foie gras and pâté and those things, right? People in France all grew up eating that, or most of them did, and they love it. I personally can't. Really, the taste is just horrible for me. That's where my culturally, that's where I came from. And so I can look at why I don't like it. It doesn't mean that other people shouldn't eat it, or that I should make a big deal about not liking it, or I can question why I don't like it without limiting my story and tying a rope around myself about that something. With the practice, though, the whole point of that practice is to help us let go of our attachments. So if we stop ourselves with that first attachment, I don't like to count my breath, then we've really strayed from what the practice is about. You know? And if the person giving the instructions immediately says, oh, okay, you don't have to do that, you can do something else, well then, you're going to want to do something else, and something else, and something else, and something else. And sticking with whatever it is powerful. You know, sticking with this phrase, everything expresses the Dharma, is really powerful. Instead of saying, I don't really like the way that phrase is written, maybe I should change it and write it another way. Maybe I should put it in my words. You know, even this translation of the relative, the identity of relative and absolute, I thought, that's really interesting, you know, the way that they translated it. But then at the same time, I thought, you know, some of the other stuff they translated seemed like it was pulling us away from the essence of what was being said, like wanting to say it my way instead of holding to the essence of what was being said. I liked that these two phrases, you know, kind of gave a different twist on it without taking away from the original meaning. I mean, maybe just giving a different way of, you know, if you don't see the way with your own eyes, I like that, with your own eyes, meaning direct experience of the way. Usually it's, you know, what is it? If you don't see the way, even though you walk on it,
you are miles and miles away
from it, right? So, if you don't see the way, okay, right. But with your own eyes is different than just if you don't see the way. It's the direct experience of it. No separation. Not being stingy with the way, seeing the way, seeing that this is the way right here. being stingy with it is like limiting it to it. Only certain things are the way.
Mm.
This is not the way. And that can be, you know, in our daily lives, in our work, in our families, all of that. Someone came to Doku-san, Joanna came to Doku-san the other day with her baby, right? Who was just like a month old or something. And she had intended, he was asleep. So she signed on to come to the online Doku-san, but then she was in the waiting room and she had to wait. And so when she finally came on, he was awake. And she was trying to, he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't crying or she could just hold him. It was no problem. And so, well, that is the way at that moment. Not picking and choosing, not tying a rope around yourself that, or, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. people say, oh, I'm not coming to Doku-san because I don't have anything to say, or I don't know the answer to my koan or something. And I always say, that's not a reason not to come. That's really being stingy, if we say that. I don't not come to Doku-san because I don't have anything to say. I have no idea what I will say. I mean, from my position in this seat, you know, I don't refrain from coming because I don't know what I'm going to say. How could I know what I'm going to say? Because I don't know who's going to be there, and I don't know what they'll say. I don't know what the moment is. I respond to it. And that's the same thing for the people who come, you know. So Joanna just came. The baby woke up. His name is Finn. We can call him by his name. It is Finn, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. My Dharma brother Scott, his son is also called mm-hmm. Finn. And so for a moment I was like, oh, wait. She didn't say, oh, okay, no, I can't do this. She was there, the baby was there with her. And that was that. You know, maybe that's stingy, maybe it could, I refrain from being, I vow to refrain from being stingy, it could be, I vow to refrain from holding myself back. I vow to refrain from limiting myself, especially with the Dharma. And that means to not limit the Dharma, not to see it as only this. It is only this, but it's also only this, and 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 only this. Or, you know, we have the koan in the count the stars in the heavens, you know, something like that. So, you know, sometimes people say, oh, well, it's daytime, so I can't see the stars, so I, you know, I don't know. Ding, 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 nope. or, you know, heavens, what is heavens? There's only one heaven, there's no heaven. And it's like, ah, ding, 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 ding. We limit ourselves, you know? And on this way, we learn to free ourselves. It's a path of liberation, we say, you know? And then, as that quote that I like from Toni Morrison says, the function of freedom, so once you've freed yourself, the function of it is to free somebody else. And that applies every moment. That's, you know, that's the Dharma expressing itself at every moment.
What is the exact?
Toni Morrison, American.
This just came up on a Thursday night. Who was saying this?
I probably said it. Yeah. Or was it in a study group? I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
One or the other. Yeah. I think it was in a study group.
Yeah. It's in the last couple of weeks.
You know, I mean, because I'm kind of obsessional, and so I come across these phrases, and then suddenly it's like everything is that. And if it speaks, you know, it just seems like it's a brilliant flash. The function of freedom is to free someone else. It's just that's so much resume. Is a resume. No, we don't say that in English. Summarizes our path. The path of the Bodhisattva is that, you know, the path of liberation. And then when you're free, then you free somebody else. And it's ongoing. It's not like you arrive suddenly at freedom and you. And then you free someone else. It's by freeing somebody else that you free yourself. You know, it's on and on and on. So, I don't know what time it is, but...
5:02.
5:02, yeah. 5:02 what? I've lost that. Okay, great. Like, where are we? What day? What time? Okay, so, yeah, if there's any... I'll stop there. Any questions, comments...
Maybe just to say that I mentioned it Thursday, I think, and I saw that movie that, and there's the, at some point, talk,
which
recite, it's called the Life of Chuck, and at some point they quote this poem from, I mean, Walt Whitman, but also that's a poem by Amy. I won't go into the poem, but I contain multitudes, and I've been sitting with that these past days, and it's exactly the same as with the everything is the Dharma.
Really expresses
it. Expresses the Dharma. It's just boundless and amazing how it frees you when you see that and when you sit with it. And when it arises, it's just like, yeah. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Walt Whitman is brilliant.
I also had my Walt Whitman phase, but we won't go back to that. But,
Sure. I don't agree that this poem is not appropriate for a wedding.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Because in arguments of which I know quite a bit, that was, at least in the arguments I had as a married woman, that was one of the things. But you owe me. If it wasn't set out right. So taking that out of it, I think, is a real manifestation of loving somebody. It's not trying to get yours back.
Interesting, okay.
And I'm sure she knows this person well enough to have fought with them over these issues before. You know, I did this and you did that, but I do more and you don't do enough, and it's not fair. And
okay, yeah, I'll consider it. Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
I haven't abandoned it, but yeah.
Okay.
And it's true, huh? We're so much in the, whether it's in a marriage or in life, you know, you owe me.
There's a wonderful phrase in Proud Mary. It was Rita. No, yeah. No. Tina Turner. Where she says, when you go down to the river, there are people, you'll find people who live there. If you don't have no money, it don't make no difference. People at the river like to give. And every time I hear that phrase, in my family, nobody really liked to give. They wanted to make sure that we all had ours, that this is mine. And that phrase, just that there are people living down by the river who they'd like you to ask them for a loan. It just amazes me every time.
Nice. Yep.
Also, thank you for your talk. I think it's quite essential, this teaching. What came up by me also when you said about this phrase of Gampo, if you don't want to leave the Zendo, don't enter the Zendo. I think, or I see for myself, that a trap that we are easily going in, that everything expresses the Dharma, is that we are very much interested in beginnings and so on, but that endings, the things that end life, that end things, that end, that they also, that's also an expression of the Dharma.
Yeah.
And in my experience, that's something for us all, for me also, but I see it with people, that is very, very difficult. It's not a judgment about what happened, but I talked with a woman yesterday. We are in my room, and there was also there were also flowers, and she was expressing that she had a friend who was very ill, and that she hesitated to visit this person because she said, perhaps she will, this person will die, and I don't want to have this image. I want to have to have this image of someone flourishing and not going with this image of someone dying. And I was looking to the flowers and I said, one thing is you don't know if you will have this image. That's also an idea. I will have this image from the dying. But we do something like, if it is with flowers also, we don't, I said, these flowers are flourishing, and you see already some leaves going on, and then I do them in the green container, but I will not say, oh, I put them in the green container, and now it is gone. It is a normal process, you know? And so why do we, but things that we are very attached on, we don't want them to end, you understand? But it is also, that was coming up, it's also really an expression of the Dharma. That's all that was coming up with what you
Absolutely,
said.
Yeah.
We are so much, we like beginnings, babies who are born, and yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And the whatever death is as full and alive with itself as birth. You know, death is alive with death, and
also,
and old age is alive with old age, and
and like we see, we are aging.
Absolutely.
So it is. It is just like that.
Expression
of the Dharma.
I thought, you know, I was thinking at one point, you know, Christelle. I mean, I've known Christelle for like 30 years or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what year we met, but it was the late 90s probably, right?
Yeah.
And we've, like, been expressing the Dharma all this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even before we knew each other, we were expressing the Dharma.
Yeah.
But,
Well, I don't want to rush myself to finding loss more than whatever the opposite is. I mean, okay, death is an important and real part of life. It's hard to deny it, but it's also loss and pain and all kinds of things. Who likes pain?
Well, see, the thing is, we think so. Then we immediately think that okay, so we have to like it, but that's not what this means. It means that it is whole and complete, and the pain is whole and complete and full, and can we, the path of liberation is to greet them each with equanimity, that to treat them each equally, not that we like death or that we dislike birth because we dislike death. You know, it's that we honor it fully for what it is and experience it fully for whatever it is, experience fully the pain, fully the loss, fully the sadness, whatever it is. We give ourselves, we're not stingy with it, you know. It doesn't mean that we are gonna, like, you know, let's all go die, you know, or let's, you know, indulge ourselves in this horrible pain. No, it just means to give ourselves completely to it. And so, you know, when my father died, I went to see him, and I had to leave a retreat and, you know, travel back from Nijmegen and the Netherlands, and then travel all the way across the ocean and go see my father, who was dying in the hospital. And because my mother said, the doctor said the children should come, you know, so we all came. And I spent a week with him, with my family too, and as the week was going on, he was, by the time I had to leave, I had my daughter with me, and the doctor had said, we brought him home and we were doing home hospice. Doctor said it could be 3 months, you know, we just don't know. And so I had to leave, I had to go back to work and whatever. And so by the time I left, he was barely conscious. Although in the beginning of the week, we could actually almost have a conversation. And I just did, during that week, I did not hold back. I said to him what I needed to say, what I felt. I didn't worry about, I don't want to say that, it's going to be too painful, or I don't want to be there, I don't want to see him like this, or getting ahead of myself. You know, I was so enthused by the fact that the television was on in the hospital room, and it was in December of 2000 when there was this contentious election between Bush and Gore. And on the television screen came Bush and Cheney, who were going to make some statement to the press. And my father said, turn that thing off. I don't want to see those bastards. You know, this is my father on his deathbed. And he was still so alive, you know. And so by the time he left, by the time I left, lapsus there, you know. By the time I left, he was barely, I don't know if he even heard me, but I said, you know, everything I could to him, that, you know, whatever came to me, I said it, and just like, you know, crying for all I'm worth, and left, flew back to the U.S., to France, come back during the night after I came back, died. My mother calls and said he'd died the next morning. It was actually the next morning in the U.S., but he died the next day. And so, next day, I take a plane, I go back. And I was the one among my sisters and brothers who was like doing the most crying. I was just like, my mother never shed a tear, actually, which was extraordinary. But and it was because I was holding nothing back. It was really like I was fully giving myself to the grief, to the sadness, to the pain, just fully, fully, fully. And it was so liberating. And since then, it's been so liberating that I feel like nothing was left behind. No regret. No, I should have said this, I should have done that. Oh, you know. No, it was an absolutely beautiful experience of giving myself completely to the grief and the loss and whatever it is. And I had this beloved mala that I wore in those days, and I put it in the casket. My daughter had this beloved little teddy bear that she put in the casket. You know, I just gave everything, gave it all away. So I can't say that I liked the fact that my father died, you know, but it was a wonderful experience, not in the sense of, but it was a wonderful experience of being free, you know, and full, so.
Well, not to push a point, but I've had similar experiences. Those are full, and there are lots of deaths when you miss it.
Yeah.
You find out later.
Absolutely.
You didn't see the person, you miss them anyway. You know, it's the opposite of that.
Absolutely. So recently for me, it's this woman, this poet who was my teacher, who that's the experience I've had with them. I didn't see her. I didn't go see her. I didn't know, you know. So there's all sorts of guilt around that and stuff like that. But at the same time, that too is an expression of the Dharma. Whatever. It's all it. What's the time?
10 past.
Okay. I just don't remember what our schedule is, so.
We're supposed to be finished.
Okay, that's what I thought. So that's why I've kind of been like anxious about it. Okay, so we will finish here. Friends on Zoom, and we'll be back at what time?
3.
2 for you, 3 for us. If you're coming back, maybe you're not coming back. You will be here. Thank you. Now we have a lunch break.
I was going to say 3 bows, but there are 4.